You're listening to The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Area 52, Tasmania's largest independent pop culture retailer. Find them at 104 Elizabeth Street, Hobart, or online at area52.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Good evening, everybody. You are with The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, brought to you by our good friends at Area 52. Go give them all your money. This is episode 204?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. On the 15th of March, 2018. And yesterday was a very sad day for the world, a passing of an absolute genius, Mr. Stephen Hawking.
Oh, yes. No, that was really actually... Look, it was surprising and obviously overwhelming, but it was also amazing that there was news that I actually cared about in the world.
Yes, and then about half an hour later, I think I clicked to the same news site and they had something about a show called Married at First Sight.
Oh, there you go.
And I was remembered, High. Maybe he's probably better off not in this world anymore because he was clearly too damn good for it.
Well, the amazing thing is they only expected him to live for about 22 years, I think, very early on was about the average lifespan for someone with that condition. So, you know, not saying he had a really good run and he should be happy with what he got, but...
Yeah, but at the end of the day. Anyway, should have introduced ourselves. I am Leon. I am here with Mark and Garth. And always remember to offer a compliment. You'll find the good feelings that flow from it as much yours as the recipient.
That was an inspirational booklet in your pocket, wasn't it?
No.
Leon, what a lovely thing to say. That's very thoughtful of you.
I may have bought the Little Book of Calm before I came here tonight, just for funsies. So that's what I did. So, Garth, what are we doing on this show of ours this evening?
My goodness, we are going back to some random country that I haven't visited for a long, long time because we are not talking a board game this week.
No.
Hey. I know. We'll leave it at that. Mm. We then have all the news and all the winners from the Golden Geek Awards, which has recently been announced. And Mark, you're not doing Kickstarter this week, okay?
No Kickstarter.
You are not doing Kickstarter this week.
No.
So you're doing news instead. And we will draw, finally, our BorderCon competition. The entries have come in. That's all been correlated. We have used very high-level algorithms, which would make Stephen Hawking really proud.
Exactly.
And we've come up with some winners.
Lovely.
So all that and potentially some more.
Probably
thanks,
not.
Area 52. Mark, throw to a song and we'll be back after this.
Yeah, that was the Slag Queens, a Tassie act with Lena here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. We've got episode 204 today on the 15th of March. Before we get to what we have been playing, which isn't a board game, let me just give you some advice, gentlemen. Ignore small print. Small print is custom designed to induce frustration. If you want to stay calm, have someone else read and explain the small type for you. This is why, Garth, I get you to explain all the board games.
Mm. This is why I explained why I wasn't here last week, if this is what the show's turning into.
Yes. We've gone half inspirational. We've run out of topics to talk about.
Well, look, just for once, we're going to talk about something we've been playing that isn't a board game, Leon.
No, all right. I'm going to tell you about this game. I've only just discovered it. It's a kind of a new, hip, cool thing.
Oh,
right?
Awesome.
You guys might have heard about it. It's the thing that all the kids are playing. It's called Dungeons & Dragons.
I see.
Now, you guys are a little bit late to the party, aren't you?
You guys may have some familiarity with it, but first, let me give you a bit of a history lesson, and then you can chime in with all your old man experience.
Okay.
So, Dungeons & Dragons, or D&D, again, for all us cool kids, is a fantasy tabletop role-playing game. You may know that.
Oh.
Originally designed by Gary Gygax and David Anderson, it was first published in 1974 by Tactical Studio Rules, or TSR. The game has been published by Wizards of the Coast, who are also owned by Hasbro, since 1997. It was derived from miniature war games, with a variation of the chainmail serving as its initial rule system, which was also designed by Gary Gygax. D&D publication is commonly recognised as the beginning of modern role-playing games and the role-playing industry itself.
Boom.
So it's a bit big.
Leon.
Yep.
I got to pick you up.
What?
It's probably a automated spell checker thingy.
Right.
Dave Arneson was the dude who was with Gary Gygax.
Oh, no, you are correct. I just read it wrong.
You've just been reading it wrong, yeah.
So, apologies
to Dave Arneson.
See, us cool kids, we don't actually read the words. We get the feel of the words.
Well, you're more used to reading emojis, aren't you?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Poop,
Yeah.
Eggplant, squishy, poop, poop, smiley. Oh,
I don't want to know about your... Well, any time you're not here in the studio, apparently. So, anyway, there's been lots of different editions of the old D&D over the years. The second edition came out in 1989, 2 years after I was born. And so 15 years the original version was around for,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of got lots of different bits in the middle there with D&D Advanced and kind of that kind of stuff. Then third edition, which came out in 2000, so 11 years between them. Then fourth edition came out in 2006, which was a bit controversial because it was only 6 years after the previous edition, so a lot of people were rather annoyed that they just got into buying all these books and now they're going to bring out another edition already.
Probably have to buy some more dice as well.
And also, fourth edition did change things up quite a bit, so people weren't big fans of it. So in the kind of mid-2000s, that's when you saw the rise of your Pathfinders and all these other kind of systems like that.
Gotcha.
But then Dungeons & Dragons, the beast that will never die, in 2014 released the fifth edition of Dungeons & Dragons, which is what we are dealing with at the moment.
Correct.
And it is generally considered very favourable by even people that have been playing it for a long time, as well as newbies. And D&D itself, it is as bigger than it has ever been. And it's to do with lots of different things, mainly geek culture in general, to do with like Marvel films and stuff. It's a fine thing now. It's not 15 years ago. It was like, you can't read comic books, you can't play board games, you can't, it's just all nerdy. Blah, blah, blah. Nope, that's luckily dead and gone, and all the ignorance has kind of faded away. Well, some of it anyway. But then in the last couple of years, especially, you got things like Stranger Things.
Yeah.
There's been a big influence. Big Bang Theory. Then you get things like Harmon Quest, which I talked about, the creator of Rick and Morty, who has his own. So although they use the Pathfinder rules, you know, it's still an RPG at the end
Correct.
Of the day.
Yeah, right it is.
Yeah, so as I said, you know, 10 years ago, comics were kind of cool. Now it's in this day and age, it's kind of D&D is the cool thing, especially in the last year. Because in 2017, it was the biggest year in terms of sales in Dungeons & Dragons history.
Really? Wow.
Yep. And in that year alone, over 8.5 million Americans played Dungeons & Dragons mm-hmm. in 2017. Over 9 million people watched it on Twitch, and probably that number, and then some have since watched it on YouTube. So it is as big, it is literally bigger now than it has ever been before.
Which is fantastic.
And I was going to say, I think, you know, YouTube, Twitch, podcasts, streaming, all that stuff clearly is contributing to this massive growth, because before it was such a... almost an underculture where if you didn't know someone who had the books or know someone who played it regularly, it was really hard to find out about it, apart from, you know, reading stories about black magic and satanic worship and all that stuff. But now it's just, it's everywhere.
Yeah, and as we kind of said, it's one of those things that, like, obviously people these days get all like, oh, what are kids doing watching video games on Twitch and all that kind of stuff, which is, you know, fair enough criticism, I guess. But we're, with D&D, all it is... it is a podcast or an audio book that doesn't have a script.
Correct.
So it's something you can watch or you can something you can listen to, and something you could, you know, in this day and age, you can invite people around for a, you know, to have dinner and whatever else, and then just play D&D just like you could anything else.
D&D.
And the point is, it's just bloody fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To be able to sit around a table with a bunch of friends or potentially a bunch of people who you haven't met but just want to give it a go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you get to exercise all that grade 8 and grade 9 acting that we all put to good use.
Well,
I mean, the whole point of a lot of entertainment is escapism.
Correct.
And what's more escapism than literally being somebody else?
Yeah,
indeed.
Right, so you two Codgers, when did you guys first play D&D? We'll start with the younger of the Codgers, Garth. When did you first play or experience D&D?
Look, in terms of when I first played, I reckon I'm a relative newcomer. Mm. So it's probably only been the last 5 years, to be honest, that I have sat down around a table rolling fistfuls of dice, playing Pathfinder, playing D&D, playing Edge of the Empire.
Cthulhu, obviously.
Cthulhu. Shorter one-shot versions, Fiasco, a few other types and a few other systems as well, but mm-hmm. definitely the one that has probably been the constant and the one that I find just easiest to get straight into is D&D, especially playing 5th Ed, which I think might be the only edition I have actually played.
Mm.
Yeah.
So I know it. I know how to roll a D20. Not well, but I know how to roll one.
Yes. Marky boy, yours is probably slightly different.
Yes. I have to admit, I did play a little bit of...
the beta.
What?
The beta of the original.
First edition.
Back in 73.
No, it would have been probably about 1980 or 1981 as a young high school, mm-hmm. early days of high school lad. Mm. Not much, but just fascinated to see it. And then in university, I played a little bit of D&D. I played a bit of like Traveller, the role-playing game,
yep.
in space, and a couple of other sort of thingies. And I think role-playing is something I've sort of flirted with. It's like every few years.
I don't blame you, Mark. Try to escape as much as possible.
Oh, mate. Look, absolutely. Look, it's so much fun. I had a huge involvement with 3.5. That was a big one. I was involved in a big campaign where I moved back to Tasmania here. Mm-hmm. And it was actually that group that then led me to go and join up with the Hobart Game Society.
Okay,
and
awesome.
Got me here.
Yeah, and the whole point is every week we tell you about all these great board games to play and whatever else, a lot of which are quite expensive once you start adding them up. But at the end of the day, if you get four or five people that you could get together regularly, I mean, if one person buys all the books, even that's a couple of $100. But theoretically, if everyone just bought like a book each or something like that, it's, say, $50 per person yep. investment. And if you're relatively creative, it's thousands and thousands of hours where you need nothing else except your creativity, some pen and paper. And
well, there are games that have been going on for decades.
Yeah.
It's really that simple.
Yeah.
It pops up from time and time again where there's a game that's been going on in the same basement for 35 years or what have you.
Yeah.
There is no game, bar a few classics, that people will play in board gaming for that long.
Yep.
So D&D is just something that just never stops giving.
So the main reason we wanted to bring it up today and to take it out of the basement and kind of bring it into the future. So we have just started playing a campaign with our friend of the show, Aiden, as well as our good friend Oren, who is the DM for the session. It's based in the World of Warcraft world of, what's it called again?
Azeroth.
Azeroth, I always forget it. And we're all basic, we're not baddies, but we're orcs and trolls and goblins and all that kind of jazz.
We're from the Horde as opposed to the
yes.
Alliance.
Which yeah, we're playing it in a World of Warcraft.
Yeah, setting. So a lot yeah. of people look at World of Warcraft and think, oh, Alliance are the good guys, the Horde are the bad guys. It just really depends which side of the coin you look at. Because, hey, we're just nice people. We're out there doing nice stuff with nice folk.
But, yes, so the future aspect, and what we mainly reason we're talking about this, is because we are, a lot of us are using a website / an app called D&D Beyond.
Yes.
Mm.
So it's mainly a website at the moment. There is an app, but it is in very early beta, so it doesn't have a lot of the same features. And even the app, the website itself has not been up that long.
Right.
So it's got lots of stuff on there, but even still that is growing literally every day. So yes. it is, think of it, there's lots of, had in the past, lots of different kind of virtual D&D things, but this one is the one that is, I think, the most amount of effort's been put into it.
Well, look, the thing that really impresses me about it is the one part of D&D that I'm not a massive fan of, but almost everyone else is, and it's the character creation
yep.
side of it.
Yes.
I like playing and role-playing in the game, but I'm not necessarily the stats person who wants to go there and go, I'm going to add one to that skill and minus one from that, and I'll be proficient in that, and oh, how do the numbers all stack
yeah.
up? I just don't care too much. Whereas with D&D Beyond, you can choose your race, and it will go click, 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 click. Here's the things that you're proficient in. How does that sound? Here's your race. Here's your class.
Yep.
Give us some stats. Bang. And you can create a character from scratch in 5 minutes.
Yeah, so I created a character with a basic knowledge of D&D, as you said, in 5 minutes on that app, whereas it's all well and good if you're with somebody that's played the game for years. You can say, I want to be an orc, mate, and I want to be a barbarian. They can go, okay, with that, you would get access to blah, blah, blah. They would know.
Mm.
But most of us, even if you've got the book in front of you, which are the hardcovers of these books are absolutely brilliant books, but you have to go through a hell of a lot of it unless you read that cover to cover, which, you know, it's a lot of time.
Correct.
D&D Beyond is perfect for something like that. And there are various different levels of D&D Beyond, so you can subscribe to it, and I'll talk to that in a minute. But there's stuff on there that is for free, so you don't have to spend a single cent, and that is stuff as the basic rules, which is alone something that's awesome that you can access, as well as you can search on there. So anything you want, you can get that search bar, put in that keyword, and it'll come up with the right, correct page. As well as there is the basic list of spells and magic items and basic equipment that come with the magic rules. There's a basic monster listing as well. You can create a character, which if you don't buy any of the books digitally, you don't have much to choose from, like in terms of races and classes. But you've still got, you know, your barbarians, your humans, your rogues,
your elves.
You can
form a fully functioning.
You can have a crack, basically. Yeah. You can even create the campaigns, and you can create your own homebrew spells and monsters and all this kind of stuff. All that's the stuff you can do for free.
Yes.
Without having to spend a cent. Whereas, if you spend a little bit of money and you, there's two different levels. There's a hero level and a master level. The hero level is kind of like, if you're just a player in other people's campaigns, that's probably what you want. You can use it to create all these different characters. You can create as many characters as you damn well please, put them in different people's campaigns and whatnot. And then there's the master level, which is, again, it's a little bit more expensive, but you have access to a whole community of homebrew stuff for a start. And obviously, people that play this game are creative folk, so there's a lot of that out there. And yeah, anytime you've got the master level, if you buy a book, which the digital books aren't that badly priced, they aren't the same amount as your hardcovers, which are about $50 Australian. You can get the books on there for probably about $30 Australian, which some people would say that's quite a bit for digital. However, like I said, if you invest in this as kind of a group, get everyone together, that's a fiver a player. That's nothing.
Yes.
And you can share that book with everybody. And then everybody has access to all those things when they create characters, all the new spells, all the new monsters will all have access to it. And every single book that's been released so far for 5th edition is on there as well.
Brilliant.
And you don't need too many books to really have
a
good set of resources. You know, you got your basic player guide, your monster manual, and your DM, your dungeon master's guide. So those three, I guess they're the critical ones.
Yeah.
And then there are some, you were telling me earlier, Leon, there are some that I guess are becoming critical that are really popular.
Yeah, there's the Volo's Guide to Monsters, which I just picked up the actual physical book myself, which is basically Monster Manual version 2.
Yeah.
The newest expansion that's just come out, which is, it's Xanathar's, it starts with an X, either way.
Yeah.
That is kind of like your player manual volume 2, because it's got new sorts of races and all that kind of stuff. And then the next expansion that came out is, I can't remember the name off the top of my head, is like the Monster Manual Volume 3.
Yeah,
so
wow.
You're not short of monsters and character stuff. And then there's...
Is that Mordenkainen's Tome of Foes?
That's exactly what it is.
Leon, do you know who Mordenkainen is / was?
He's the guy who wrote a Tome of Foes.
No, he was Gary Gygax's wizard.
Oh, really?
In his original campaign, Mordenkainen.
I bet there are some...
just a bit of old school legend.
I was about to say,
there.
I bet there's some of our elder listeners out there probably ripping their hair out. Who's this young punk?
Now, for those of us like me, who, again, more than happy to be a player, but don't want to know the nitty-gritty of it all, what I also really enjoy is the usability of the character sheets that are on the website.
Yes, what I was getting to next. They're virtual character sheets, which are... they're exactly what they say on the tin. They're a character sheet you can have on any iPad or any tablet. You can have it on your phone, but it's a bit small.
It is, yes.
But, so you iPad or tablet, preferably, and it has everything there, and you can cross off, you know, everything you need and add your gold onto it, add your hit points, take them off. You've gone up a level, it automatically tells you what you have access to.
That's the thing I loved. As you use your spells, you know, you hit it, it tells you which spell slot you've used up and how many you've got to go.
Yep.
It tells you, if you're using your longbow, well, you add, instead of going... oh, it's a 1d6, and then I've got to add a 1d8 plus 3. You know, it puts it all together for you automatically. You click on the weapon, and it gives you your to hit. It's adding in all your modifiers through all your different states and everything. It's I just found it so simple. I mean, I have created many, many characters over the years, and I love a good paper character sheet, but this just made it so simple. And on the iPad... really easy to
use. What I like about it is it means that you're not interrupting the flow of the game so much, because so many times I've been saying,
Why do I got to roll again?
Yeah,
You're ruining my emotion.
I'm going to do the spell of blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
How many feet does it go and what does it do and what do I have to roll and who's got the book again?
Yeah.
So it's just all on your one sheet. Everyone can see it. And as you said, because... you've created a campaign, the DM can see your character sheets and make sure that you are doing a legitimately correct attack.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives the DM that extra bit of insight as well, which is wonderful. It's just so bloody easy.
Yeah.
And another cool thing that I forgot to mention is that with all the books, every single book that you can buy on there, so all the different campaign books or base books, you can actually go into them and buy specific things. If you don't want to buy the whole book,
yeah.
which is what I did, I wanted to be a goblin in one of our campaigns. I had to buy, I just bought it separately for like $2. And then in another campaign that I'm about to start with some other friends, I wanted to be a samurai.
Yeah, he's hooked.
I'm actually, and there's actually a third one I'm a part of soon as well, because I'm that popular and just good at stuff. Either way, I wanted to be a samurai in that, so I bought that as well. But Aiden was telling me a cool thing that if I were to buy that, say, for $2, if he was then to go buy that book, he's the one we're using his account for, that $2 comes off that book.
Oh, boom. Really?
There yes. you go.
Which is
something he owes you $2.
Which is something they absolutely didn't have to do,
yeah.
but they did. And yeah. as we mentioned when we first started talking about this, this is all relatively new and in beta, and it's this good already.
Yeah, and they've clearly got a bit of traction because they're already sponsors of Critical Role.
They're working hand in hand with Critical Role.
Yeah.
They've actually got custom stuff that the Critical Role guys
come
up with.
There's Critical Role campaign info.
Their Blood Hunter, the race that they come up with on that show, you can have access to that on the app as well, and lots of other stuff, a bit of cross promotion there. But in, like I said, if you get into that homebrew stuff that the community's created, I mean, God knows what's in there.
So the thing is, there's another really useful website called Roll20,
yep.
Which is where DMs can create maps, and you can basically go and do online play, and it's, you know, your top-down version of
yeah.
whatever maps are being created. What a great combination to work those two together, where you've got that really great character sheet with a really beautiful map system.
Yeah, because I remember when the people out there first started talking about Windows, Microsoft Surface, and it was all about, oh, well, now you'll be able to have this big table that's a glass top, and you'll be able to move your little minis, and they'll interact with the table, and then the DM will be able to make the maps move around and stuff. And the focus was always on that, you know, that you could use a computer for your maps and things like that, but not the character sheets and the back-end stuff. And the way they've done this in D&D Bond is awesome. The fact that you can access books that other people have bought. And as you said, bring that together with a system for generating maps and things. The world is literally your oyster in this role-playing stuff.
And playing stuff like this over Skype, you know, you can play this with friends all around the world. And it's just, especially now with D&D Beyond, all you need is a laptop in front of you or an iPad in front of you, and yeah. you're just good to go.
Oh, it's too easy.
And I've talked about it heaps in the last couple of months, that the show I've watched on YouTube, The High Rollers,
yep.
that's a great one to look into. There's a main quest that's like 70-odd episodes, but then they've done two extra little mini ones that are about 10 episodes each.
Yeah.
So they're worth looking into, as well as Critical Role, obviously the massive one. They're two of the biggest ones on YouTube, but it's a good thing.
It is an amazing thing.
Glad that I discovered it and gave it to all you guys.
Oh, yeah, it was all you.
Yep.
Well, thanks, Leon. That was really, really interesting. I do want to go back and play D&D because we missed it this week.
Yes.
Because someone wasn't around.
Someone was sick and dying.
Exactly. So thanks, Area 52, for not making me sick. Actually, Leon, did you end up spending that gift voucher that I heard you got?
Yes, I did.
Really?
Did you buy D&D stuff?
I did.
There you go.
I bought the Monsters Guide with it and a few other bibs and bobs.
All right, so before we go to a song, I think Leon has some inspirational words for us all.
Learn to recognize signs of tension and anxiety in others. In this way, you can In this way, you can be aware of your own psychology and can work towards becoming calmer.
I'm going to burn that book. Can we play our song, please?
Yep.
Warning, Will Robinson. That was a Tassie act called Warning, Will Robinson, with their track Lost in Space here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Do you think that was that Stephen Hawking or just a poor imitation?
Just a poor imitation.
Too
robot.
Soon. Anyway, you're here with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio, the show that talks about board games.
Sometimes.
We've been talking about role-playing games tonight, but now we're going to get back to the meat.
Correct.
But before we do, wherever you go in life, whatever you do, make a conscious effort to add a little beauty or to contribute to the beauty that's already there, which is, of course, what we're doing in this beautiful hobby of board games.
Because we're nothing but positive. And before you start talking, Garth, because I can see it on your face that you want to say words out of it, We are brought to you this week by Area 52. We may have mentioned that once or twice before, but if you're listening to this live on Saturday, as well as when I put it up, probably tomorrow night for the podcast, on the 17th of March, which is St. Paddy's Day, and it's going to be mayhem next door at the New Sydney.
Crazy day.
The Silver Bullet Society, my little group, are holding the Tasmanian Championships of Werewolf. And everybody is invited to free come and enjoy the festivities in the night. And
the festivities?
The festivities.
The festivities.
And have me yell at you in person in a game.
For free?
For free. This, and you could even go next door and have a cheeky Guinness.
This episode is just like Leon and Friends and Friends, isn't it?
I think it is, really.
Shouldn't every episode be? I tried to turn this into a wrestling podcast. You didn't go for that. But I think Leon and Friends could catch on.
Well, it's good to know that your cats will be joining you in role-playing.
Oh, it's not a bad idea.
Well, they're your other characters, aren't they?
Yeah, Joker would be good at it. Not about Izzy and Zoe, they're written.
Okay. Garth.
Yes.
There were some awards recently.
There was. There was some big, golden, shiny, geek-related awards that happened very recently. It was the 12th annual Golden Geek Awards. It all happened through the Board Game Geek and RPG Geek and Video Game Geek empires.
Mm.
So it's about time that we talked about them and celebrated all these wonderful, wonderful successes. So let's start at the bottom of the pile.
Are they sending us the physical award in the mail, or is it more like a certificate?
We'll get to Best Podcast because there is some big news there.
Uh-huh.
But they did show the Video Game Geek winners, Leon.
Oh.
It was basically a Legend of Zelda Love Fest this year. Look, we're not going to spend too much time on it, but needless to say, it got Game of the Year, it got Best Visuals, it got Most Innovative Game. So, look, it won a lot.
Yeah.
There was a bit of Divinity Original Sin for the PC, sort of the RPG style, Horizon Zero Dawn, which I was speaking with Trent last night. He still can't beat the final boss. He's done 99.5% of the game, but can't beat this one little boss. So, look, that was cool. Cuphead won the indie games, which is not surprising. It looks amazing.
Yeah. They worked on it for long enough, and it is pretty damn good. Hard as hell.
One of those deceptively tricky games. It looks like it's just 1930s, 1940s Disney cartoon style, and then just smacks you around the head.
It's stupid hard.
We then go into the RPG Geek winners, and Xanathar's Guide to Everything won quite a few awards as well, so tying it in quite nicely with your D&D segment there. It won Best Supplement, Best Artwork and Presentation as well. But then the Game of the Year went to Tales from the Loop, which I don't know anything about because I don't really know too much about other RPG systems.
Well, maybe we should get on to it so we can review it, and then we will be... What will we be if we talk about it? We'll be in the...
Just in the loop?
Oh, fuck, just keep going.
Right.
I'm sick. Starfinder won a couple of runner-ups. So Starfinder, the Pathfinder in space, did all right. It might not have won because it was bloody hard to get.
Yeah.
So we then go into board games, the stuff that we know better than some people.
Mm.
So my department, the board game apps side of thing, runners-up were Race for the Galaxy, which I have not played because... I've played Race for the Galaxy a million, billion, trillion times in the physical form, in Board Game Arena, on some other apps as well. But it released a really great app in the last year. It looks amazing. Part of the reason I haven't bought it is because it's like $10 or $14. So it's a lot for a game I already know and have played a squillion times.
Yeah.
Second one was Honorim.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is a fantastic implementation of a fantastic solo game. The problem with it being such a solo game is that you spend so much bloody time shuffling that deck of cards over and over and over and over and over. It gets really quite monotonous. So the app version takes all of the physical dice shuffling out of it, puts it down into a really beautiful version. You've got the Glyphs expansion and another expansion as well that you've been able to purchase for like a buck. It looks great and plays really quick. So that's a worthy runner-up.
There was a joke there about solo games and lots of frequent hand movement, but I left it alone. Did you notice that?
That's good. You're reading your calming book.
No way.
And the winner was the big Through the Ages app, which is, again, not cheap, about $15.
Yeah.
However, when you're competing that against a $100-plus board game, the implementation of it has been pretty universally praised for giving everything that you want in this particular game. So congratulations to Vlada and Czech Games Edition for winning Best Board Game App. We're not going to talk about the podcast one yet because it's pretty exciting. We'll touch briefly on war games. Runner-up Pendragon, the fall of the Roman Britain, which is a...
Look, GMT coin game,
which we have a copy of. It's sitting in our pile of
shame.
Thanks
so much to GMT.
GMT were very generous and sent it to us. We'll have to get it to the table. It looks phenomenal.
Bordercon, I reckon.
Yeah, okay.
We hit up our friend
Adam and Tim.
Tim and Adam, yeah, if you're listening.
You might be able to get through a solid half round.
Maybe. But the winner in the war game was 878 Vikings, invasions of England again. So there's a very much a theme there. So, look, lots of Vikings on maps, moving around, pillaging, etc., etc.
Yeah.
Then we get into basically the everything else, but I'll go with party games. Yep. The winner was Werewords, which is werewolf, but you're trying to guess a word. That comes with a companion app where it generates thousands of potential words. There are people who are werewolves. There are people who are seers. It just mixes that whole werewolf mechanic up. I'm sure people who love to come to your werewolf nights, Leon, would like this kind of game. Doesn't sound particularly fun for me personally.
Was this just a particularly bad year for party games? Or
well,
what?
The runner-up was Spyfall 2, which is good stuff. Is good, but it's just a re-implementation of Spyfall, really.
Yep.
And then Tortuga 1667, which you have, don't you?
We are going to play that on my birthday in a few weeks because we are waiting to get six or eight to the table and play it properly.
All right, so we'll get that. We then get
Hang on. None of this. When I Dream.
Yeah, I was about to
Where
ask.
The bloody hell is When I Dream? If it wasn't in last year's category and it didn't bloody win it, which it should have, and it's not on this list.
Now, speaking of Where I Dream, When I Dream, because I listened to last week's episode.
Oh, really?
And I was basically screaming into my headphones because can you now at least remember the three different types of characters
in
this game?
Yes, after when I was editing it going, how did you forget
How did you forget fairies or Sandmen or the Boogeyman? You call yourselves game reviewers and you can't remember three bloody characters?
Nope.
Guys, I go for 1 week.
Yeah. So, anyway, but Garth, just think calm. Have calm thoughts. Picture calm scenes. Recall calm sounds. And guess what you'll be feeling?
Oh, I'll be feeling anger. Ah, Garth Smash. So, family games. Look, runner-up Century Spice Road. Moving cubes around. Who was it that played that?
Me.
Yeah. Leon, you played that at Bordercon.
Leon and I both played it.
You then also both played, I believe, Sagrada, didn't you?
Yes.
The dice making a beautiful window.
Yeah.
But that all paled in comparison to the winner, which was Azul, which is tile placements about tiles. So it's very much a not building windows, I'm building a tile wall theme. So Azul has been getting a lot of love over the last 3 months or whatever. It looks amazing on the table. Big chunky tiles. I can't blame it, but it's tiling.
We will probably play it. Probably won't be till Bordercon because we're probably not going to buy it ourselves.
Well, we're not big fans of abstract. I think that's the thing. And you're right. Apart from the beauty of it and the tactility of those lovely bathroom tiles, I am not a home renovator.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Look, we then had the card game category. Century Spice Road won. That runner-up was Clank in Space.
Yep.
Probably only runner-up because it was just Clank in space. Mm. And then for some bloody unknown reason, people in BGG World thought it right to put Ethnos.
Yeah.
Ethnos. As a runner-up.
Yeah.
In the best card game. Mm. Now, this is one of those games that really divides the dice men because you guys are wrong. It is not a great game.
I don't think I use the word great. It's good.
We then go to artwork, Mark, your department.
Yes.
Runner-up was Sagrada, which, I don't know. It looks great, but the art really comes from the rolling of dice. So surely you as the players deserve the awards. Then you've got Azul, which is, again, similar thing. It's just tiles.
Well, they are. I mean, that is the most attractive and most interesting part of the game is the look of it.
Of course it is. But then I think a absolute worthy winner was Photosynthesis.
Yeah.
That board and the trees, it just looks so lovely. It's so thematic. Having the sun wedge move around the board is just awesome.
Yeah.
So I believe it was fully deserved to be the winner.
It's quite calming, that game, isn't it?
Oh. Do we have a swear button? Two-player games. Winner, Codenames Duet. Now, I don't think any of us have played the two-player version of Codenames.
No.
Runner-up, Caverna, Cave vs. Cave, very simplified sort of sleek version of Caverna, and then the Fox in the Forest, basically a little trick-taking card game. And then we get to the big awards. We'll skip all through expansions because no one cares about that, but Scythe, the Wind Gambit, one mark, so another award for Scythe. We then go into basically one big award. We go into the Thematic Game Award, the Strategy Game Award, the Solo Game Award, the Innovative Game Award, the Cooperative Game Award, and the Board Game of the Year Award.
Mm.
Leon, you must be excited about
When I
the
dream.
Winner of this particular series of awards, which was and is...
Hang on, before you say that, Leon, what was your Game of the Year for 2017? Remember?
No, I don't.
Exit?
Oh, yes.
The game series?
Yes, I do, yeah.
Bomb.
Oh. Well, it probably should have won. It's pretty good.
What was my game of the year?
Doesn't matter. The winner was Gloomhaven.
My game of the year.
The game of the year for not only all of these awards, but one Mark Rickards as
well. Yeah.
And now, Gloomhaven completely dominated. It won 6 categories, yeah. So that's pretty spectacular. Look, the runner-up in the game of the year, Azul again, so we have to get this to the table. Runner-up, Seventh Continent, which got a lot of love initially, but not so much really, really now. There was also, in which category was it?
Here we go. Thematic game.
Thematic game. You've got This War of Mine, someone else's game of the year.
Yeah.
Seventh Continent again and Gloomhaven. Yeah. So thematic game is clearly where Mark and I have a lot of similarities because that is our top 3 games.
So Gloomhaven is more thematic than This War of Mine?
Apparently so.
Yeah, okay, sure.
So look, it was really a Gloomhaven love fest, this year's Golden Geek Awards. It is the number one game of all time. So it shouldn't be a surprise.
Yeah, that's right.
However, we have still played just a scratch little bit of this game. We have so much left to explore. I want to play it more to see that it really does deserve all of these accolades. I couldn't imagine playing it solo, to be honest, unless I had my own gaming room with gaming tables so I could just leave it there.
Yeah,
I couldn't imagine playing it.
And look, the last little bit of news goes to the Print and Play Awards, and it is currently sitting at the top of the BGG hotness.
As it should.
My Little Scythe.
Yes.
The little homemade mush-up between My Little Pony and Scythe for children. It got so much attention 5, 6, 7 months ago. They're now going to be releasing another more streamlined and more professional version in, I think, May this year. So
I wouldn't be surprised if we see, because I know it's been, you know, it's a homemade jobby.
Correct.
But, you know, the guys who made it teaming up with Stonemaier Games and heading to Kickstarter, and it would sell a bucket load.
Correct. And lastly, and the big one, this podcast, guys.
Can't wait.
Start with the runner-up, Heavy Cardboard. We'll start with the other runner-up, Ludology.
Yeah,
well, and now the best podcast recording to all of our game. Rado talks through.
Wait, hang on. Does Rado have a podcast?
Hey, everybody.
That's good for him.
It's great. I think it's awesome that one little man show, you know, does amazing videos.
Yeah.
And Jen is alive. I'm sure of it.
I have seen her in a video.
Seen her.
He also does a podcast. Now, I think it's pretty fair to say that none of us have listened to that podcast.
I didn't even know it was a thing.
So
I mean, it's clearly more popular than ours.
Correct.
But so good on him.
I'm sure we came fourth.
Well, he does, you know, he does have a few followers of his videos that probably check out his other stuff.
You would think so.
And, you know, look, I mean, I use Rado as a resource all the time. He is awesome. I have contributed to his... what are those things?
Yeah,
you know, Kickstarter campaign a couple of times funding him because I think without him and without Watch It Play...
Oh, without Rodney Smith.
You know, there would be a huge gap in our hobby. So I totally support that. But, yeah, I didn't even know that he had a podcast.
So there you go. You should do some research, guys.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's the Golden Geek Awards for 2017. The 12th ones are done and dusted. I am feeling very satisfied right now. Please let's go to a song before Leon has some more inspirational words of inspiration with thanks to Area 52.
A dab of lavender. Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Man Cometh. That was Ghost Poet with Kuroshi. This week brought to you by our good friends at Area 52. Go in there and buy all the D&D books. I bought one earlier today and I'm going to enjoy reading it when I get home.
Awesome.
Now, Garth, I'm going to throw to you, and it's going to be very exciting. You're going to announce the winners of our competition. But I need you to calm down a bit for a second, mate, because... No, seriously. Use a soft voice. Have you ever noticed a calm person with a loud voice?
Yes!
Far out. Can we burn this book? Like, can we actually burn this book?
I think we've read the whole thing by now.
All right. So, yes, we are about to announce the winner of our BorderCon competition.
Indeed.
Which is all about getting two tickets to said BorderCon that is happening over the Queen's Birthday long weekend in Albury, which is on the border. Hence the name BorderCon and hence the name for the BorderCon competition.
Mm.
We had entries from, I think, every state and territory in Australia.
Yeah. Yes.
Not surprisingly, not too many international entries because although we were providing the tickets to the actual BorderCon convention, not the airfares to get there.
No.
We had entries where people wanted to play their own games. We had people call and say, we want to play party games, we want to play RPGs, we want to play all styles of game. But because time is ticking, we only have one winner. So let me play the winner's entry for you, and then we'll announce who it is. How does that all sound?
It sounds good.
All right, well, here we go.
Dear me, folks, snake oil is a cure for all that ails you. For Mark, it's the essence of youth. For Garth, it evokes the satisfaction of avoiding a classic Euro-rail-themed game. And Leon, it'll make your metaphors sharper than something really sharp. Snake oil is simple to learn, compact to travel with, and provides absolute hilarity for all involved. But wait, there's more! Your chance to play Snake Oil includes free of charge, meeting and competing with not one, but two, yes, two Perth Get Board Gamers. Snake Oil believers know this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, but act now so you don't miss out. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, the terms and conditions are that you've actually won! So congratulations.
And so that was Brandon and Michelle.
Correct.
Two long-time listeners of the show. People might remember that awesome intro that we used on our 200th episode. That was done by Michelle and Brandon, and they're coming from Perth.
Which is amazing. So congratulations. We will be letting you know as soon as we get off this particular show, so that unless you're listening live, it'll be a really nice surprise for you.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mark,
news, all the news in board games. So, I've got some big quarterly review news here. Fantastic industry website ICV2. They often do quarterly reviews. I think they do them about four times a year.
Makes logical sense.
There you go. And so what they've said is there's been some big shifts in the ninth consecutive year of growth in the hobby game business. Now, mind you, this is obviously the North American market they're talking about.
Yes.
But, of course, there's a lot of similarities in the Australian market. So a survey conducted by ICV2 of manufacturers, distributors and retailers in the hobby game business found most experienced growth in 2017, with some big shifts in where the growth was coming from when compared to previous years. Now, their estimate was based on the interviews that they did, and that they estimate sales in the North American market of the hobby channel were up about 5% in 2017. Now, while the overall trend was positive, there were some big shifts.
You've got to be so careful saying shifts, don't you, Mark? There were some big shifts.
It's better than deck builder, that's for sure.
Yes.
So the collectible games category was slumped towards the end of the year, while board games and role-playing games were experiencing some rapid growth. Now, while some hobby game categories were moving in different directions, increased competition, the impact of counterfeit games, which we discussed a little while ago, the range of what industry players are reporting was wide depending on their different viewpoints and situations, but almost everyone reported a decline in sales of Magic the Gathering.
Oh, dear.
Especially in the second half of the year. And then another big impact was how many different places you can purchase hobby games, and the fact that the number is increasing rapidly. So you've got hobby stores growing. You've got brick-and-mortar stores growing.
Brick-and-mortar stores.
You've got...
they might as well be.
Other stores taking on board games. A lot of the, you know, big big box retail.
Yeah, your Best Targets Buy and your Barnes and Nobles
exactly.
and all of those.
And then, of course, you've got Amazon getting more and more into the board game market.
Not in Australia, though.
Plus eBay and other sites. So compounding the problem associated with a lot of deep discounting, which is happening online and even more so in North America than here, I don't think we're seeing any discounting here, has been the rapid increase in the number of counterfeit games being sold online to North American customers. And as the demand for board games grows, so does the amount of counterfeit merchandise.
Yes.
And games with cardboard components are most highly counterfeited. But increasingly, we are seeing games with minis being counterfeited as well.
Wowzers.
Now, predicting what will happen in 2018 was a difficult exercise for these industry players that were interviewed because the collectible games market is a bit choppy. And, of course, as we have discussed a number of times, there are unprecedented numbers of new releases in board and miniatures games. But the board game category was where the greatest levels of uncertainty lie.
Ooh.
So although
lots of shifts happening.
There could be a major shift. Although ICV2 noted they've been hearing concerns about the number of board game releases for years, they must be listening to our podcast, there's now a widespread view that a shakeout is at hand.
Okay.
I'm not sure what that means. But anyway, multiple distributors expressed the idea that there would be fewer board game releases this year.
Okay.
2018 we're talking about, which would help the market. And RPGs are still on a huge upswing, although because that portion of the market is many, many, many times smaller
it's than probably the all rest, single-handedly down to Leon.
That's right.
Now investing in RPGs.
That's obviously going to limit the impact on the overall market. But although there's considerable uncertainty to what the market's going to do in 2018, the momentum of a 9-year run of growth is remarkable, and it is likely changing the profile of the business for a long time to come.
Well, there you go.
Now, I've got a couple of interesting little charts.
Oh.
Everyone loves listening to charts.
That's right. Yes. Number 10. No.
So
I've got
Mark.
A chart of the top 10 board games for fall 2017, which is obviously our spring. So, number one. Or should I go from number 10? It's also
number 10,
exciting.
Number 10 to number 1, surely.
Number 10, Carcassonne.
Okay.
Good.
Number Classic. 9, Fallout the Board Game.
Mm-hmm.
Number 8, Betrayal at Baldur's Gate.
Sure.
There you go.
Number 7, Dark Souls. Uh-huh. Number 6, Ticket to Ride. It just never goes away.
Doesn't.
Number 5.
Has anyone played that?
Charterstone.
Some of us have, yeah.
Oh. Number 4, Scythe, the non-Little Pony version.
Shame.
Number 3, First Martians. Or clearly it should have been Terraforming Mars, Leon. Number 2, what? Pandemic.
Which
and
one?
And number 1.
This plain old vanilla Pandemic?
Just says Pandemic, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And number 1, Catan.
Shocking.
So it's amazing that, you know, you get like Charterstone in there, yeah. Dark Souls, Baldur's Gate, Fallout, in amongst Catan and Carcassonne
it's
and
good.
Ticket to Ride.
Yeah. It's exactly what you want.
It is now, kind of a mix of old and new, really,
okay,
isn't it?
Top 10 card and dice games. No, where's number 10 gone? Oh, number 10 is on the other sheet of paper. I can't believe this. Exploding Kittens. People are still buying that thing.
Wow.
Does meow.
Number 9, no surprise, meow. Cards Against Humanities.
Mm-hmm.
Number 8, Smash Up. Is that still a thing?
Yeah.
Number 7, Dominion.
That's
number 6, Marvel Legendary.
Legendary.
Number 5, Legend of the Five Rings. Number 4, Dragonfire.
Okie dokie.
Which we haven't heard a lot about. Number 3, Munchkin. Number 2, Leon.
Hello.
Rick and Morty. And number 1, Codenames.
Okie dokie.
So nearly all those things, as you just said, outsold Cards Against Humanity, which is kind of insane.
Mm.
That's good. And just finally, the top 5 role-playing games.
Yep.
Number 5, Star Trek Adventures. Number 4, Star Wars. Number 3, Pathfinder. Number 2, Starfinder.
Yeah, okay.
That's an interesting flip. And number 1, a little game called Dungeons & Dragons that we've talked about. And just to top it off, did you know the Dungeons & Dragons Player's Handbook did just recently go to number 3 on the Amazon non-fiction bestseller list.
Wowie zowie. That's amazing.
Now, it's gone down to 9 now, but it's still number one in the reference, non-fiction reference books.
It was also, I believe, on the New York Times bestseller list as well.
So there you go.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Us nerds are just such literate people, aren't we?
No, we just spend money on stupid things.
We do. Yeah,
so, look, I've got some other new game releases, but I don't think we've got time to...
Not really. We've only got about a minute before we have to wrap this up.
I might
up.
Save that up and do a combined Kickstarter news next time.
Oh,
because
good. We need to do some more
there's
Kickstarter.
There's always stuff happening on Kickstarter. Dinosaur Island, curse you!
Make love. The relaxation that follows lovemaking works on many different levels.
Not on a podcast. Okay.
And on that note, we are so far out of here, it is not funny. We have to go and play...
Mountains of Madness.
Mountains of Madness. Calmly. So we are calmly playing... All right, we're out of here. We have been the Dice Men Cometh. It's been episode 204.
Yep.
Thanks, Area 52, again.
Yep.
Please never bring an inspirational quote booklet into the studio again, because I will have to burn it all down.
Okay, but I will do it, but you have to answer me one thing quickly. What's patchouli? Because apparently I have to put it on my pillow from now on.
It's an essential oil.
Oh. Yeah.
It's really nice.
And on that note, we are out of here. We will see you next week.
Peace Bye. Be with you.
You've been listening to another episode of The Dice Men Cometh. Thanks to Area 52, Hobart's best ventilated game store, and more. Find out more on area52.com.au. They support the Dice Men, and you can too, at Patreon, for as little as just $1 per month. It's not a lot to ask for podcasting gold.